Welcome to Coffee with Catholic Workers, a podcast made by and for Catholic workers. I'm Theo, and I am not joined today by my normal co-host, Lydia. Regular listeners know we've been on a break for a few months, and while we hope to be back to our regular schedule soon, we've been super busy doing the works of mercy. In the meantime, our sound engineer Chris and I put together these few mini-episodes made up of interviews I did with some of the European Catholic workers that I got to visit this past summer. You can find more about their houses and see some similar interviews with Catholic workers from my travels at catholicworkertheo.blogspot.com. Keep an eye out for new episodes of Coffee with Catholic Workers coming soon. And until then, enjoy this interview with Dietrich from the Hamburg, Germany, Bread and Roses Catholic Worker on the work going on in that community.
Well, to cut a long story short, my name is Dietrich, by the way. We live here at Brot und Rosen, Bread and Roses, here in Hamburg. We call ourselves and are considered a Catholic worker community, although over most of the time, or all of the time, we have been living together now for 27 years. The majority of community members were not Roman Catholic, at least. So Catholic in this sense is more a broader understanding of Catholicism. But we consider ourselves being part of the movement, and mostly for the reason that we also live in a house of hospitality, as most of the Catholic worker communities do, that we talk and share about what is important to us in terms of a newsletter, you know, not a newspaper. We're not journalists, but it's at least a newsletter. So we propagate our ideas, and we make clear that it's not just the idea we band-aid the victims, but we question the system that causes victims. And we are also somehow active on different issues around climate justice, around atomic waste. It used to be for a long time about peace issues, nuclear weapons, and so do so also sometimes with civil disobedience. I mean, there are other Catholic workers, our friends of us, who are much more active in that. So, but still, we are very sympathetic and open to it. Yeah, and most of the founding members had experience with communities in the US. That means with communities like Catholic workers directly, or like myself. I lived at the Open Door community in Atlanta, Georgia, which at the time when I lived there was 86 to 88, last century. It was kind of somewhere around the Catholic worker, but not, you know, later on it was considered a Protestant Catholic worker. It was very close to the founders with folks in Los Angeles also. They kind of became big friends for quite a while. I mean, Ed Loring and Murphy Davis, and on the one hand, and Jeff Dietrich, Catherine Morris, and others on the LA side. And others were at places like Koinonia Partners or Jubilee Partners. So we, most of us had some experience with hospitality for mostly homeless people, sometimes also migrants, like at Jubilee Partners. Also here in Germany, working with homeless people. And so when we kind of banded together as a group, who we called ourselves the Friends of the Catholic Worker, we looked at our own society and we felt like, okay, we don't want to copy what we experienced in the States. We don't have the death penalty like in Georgia, where that was a very important part of the ministry when I lived there. We look at our own societies, and we know on the one hand that, and especially in the 80s, still the social system was much more elaborate about giving service to different groups of people. But When we looked closer, we saw that there was a growing exclusion of migrants, of immigrants, so to say, of people from other European countries who were at that time not part of the EU still, like Romania was for a long time a country where people came from and who lived irregularly here or very marginalized. Later on, they became an EU member, but also from many other places of the world, and that there, especially after some very harsh so-called asylum compromise, 92-93, the asylum system became very harsh, harsher than before, and the basic right to asylum in Germany was eroded a lot. And so at that time, a process started in Germany, and then in the end, you see, oh, it's all of the EU. Were a pushback of the possibility of entry into the system of, as they call themselves, you know, the space of justice, dignity and human rights, kind of like that. That's the image that the EU has itself of itself. The entry into that safe space is pushed forward or outward more and more to the borders. And as we meanwhile even experience with the latest so-called compromise, beyond the borders of the EU. And so there is a growing number of people who are not existent. So the social system, which in the 90s was much better than now still, still didn't cater to people without documents, a growing number. And so with that, we said, okay, that's what we focus on. We focus on issues of irregularization, of issues of entry into the asylum process, of issues of migration as a normality of human life on this earth. And and we also take in people. I mean, we also start a house that's big, that has more rooms than we need, and we offer hospitality or companionship to people who are without papers at that time. Oh, so that's what we did. Started living together in 96, and do that until today. Basically, the need for safe spaces for people who are outside of the system is still there. It really didn't change. Groups are sometimes changing, you know, where they come from, why they became irregular, and so on. But in the end, I mean, we still get requests basically on a weekly basis or something like that. But on the other hand, we are just very limited. We have a small house. We have space of up to, I would say, 12 people whom we don't call guests in the end, but they are household members. I mean, you're a guest for 1 week, and then it sounds peculiar if you're called a guest, because, I mean, if you live together, then the other one would always be the host and the other one the guest. It doesn't fit. So we consider ourselves as a household. And of course, there is some inequality in terms of resources, oftentimes education, access to power within the society. Being me being a German passport holder, I have totally different possibilities than a Syrian woman who doesn't have, maybe at the moment, the right of to stay in Hamburg, you know, or in Germany. So there is a drastic imbalance. We are aware of that. But in everyday life, we try to live, still try to live as a community. I mean, oftentimes it's more the term of family is used. We use it. Also, people understand it oftentimes as a so-called greater family. You know, we are not blood-wise related. But for many people who move into our house, the concept of family is wider than our concept anyhow. So even very distant cousins, they're still cousins. You don't say, oh, first, third, seventh degree. You just say cousin. And so the style of living together is also kind of a bit like this bigger family, you know, with, I mean, of course, every image has its problems. So in this case, one problem would be that we as core community, and at the moment we are four core community members, all in the age between 58 and 63. And one volunteer, she's in her mid-40s. And on the other hand, we have household members of whom many are just between 20 and 30. There are luckily also older ones among them, a few, you know, like in their 40s, or we had people of all ages, but sometimes there is a, it could easily be like we were parents and they were children. I mean, age-wise already, you know, it's also something you cannot really change, that people are just in the age of your own children. Yeah, by the way, I mean, actually, Uta and me, my wife, Uta and me and Bilke, she's also a community member. We have raised our children in the community. All of them are grown up between now almost 20 or 19 and 27. Those five children that the three of us, so to say, have together. Birgit has grown up children who were long ago kind of with her. Yeah. So what else? So that's the general style of life. Maybe one last thing before Theo might ask me a question. Indifference to some, but not to all Catholic worker communities here at our house. We as core community members, we all have part-time jobs outside, in addition to our life here. None of us has a job more than 50%, 50% meaning around 19 or 20 hours, paid hours per week. We also have it with different types of work. I mean, one of us works with a puppet theater. So in the cultural sector, like Spectrum, she's in the administration of that puppet theater. My wife, she's a pastor and she works for the World Prayer Day and women's work in the church district, but also part-time. So, but that means for our own income as a core community, and we share our income. I mean, we share the responsibility for getting through our daily needs, you know, that we, our daily expenses. We earn money outside. That is to say that the project itself, this so-called house or the house of hospitality, the possibility that, say, up to 12 people without income, I mean, it doesn't play a role whether they have any access to income or not. Normally they don't, of course, or very little. So that's not a factor for yes or no. So the cost of, you know, the rent of the house, sometimes for medical or legal costs of household members, for transportation, whatever, that's all done through donations. But we as a core community with our children, we kind of cater to our own expenses with our own income. Of course, we profit from the general household. We eat donated food. We wear donated clothes sometimes. Oftentimes we used donated furniture. So, I mean, we lower our own expenses so that it's very easily possible with part-time jobs to live a very affluent, I would say, life. As a matter of fact, we as a humble Catholic worker, I guess we are the richest Catholic worker among the Catholic workers in Europe, in terms of income, you know. I mean, others can generate quite big sums by, you know, extracting it from wealthy people. We didn't have to do that so far because we did always earn our own income. But the whole rest, we are really dependent on it's around 100,000 euros per year, 120,000 that we need just to do the daily routines of this house. And we have a rented house or houses. We don't own anything. It's all rented from mostly of a church congregation, local church congregation, and from a private little company. So Yeah, that's basically, I would say, how we work or who we are and what our main ministry is. And
You touched on it a little bit, but I wonder if you have any thoughts on the hospitality you do to migrant folks in comparison to what is more common in the U.S., like doing it for homeless folks, yeah. Whether from your experience in the Open Door, yeah. Or just what you hear of other communities.
Mm. Well, we started out based on our experiences in the States and in other places with homeless folks too. I mean, it turned out that most of the homeless people, I mean, in terms of they came to us because of homelessness, that they were also somehow migrants. There was an English, a Croatian, I mean, there was also a German, but later the last one of those people was basically a Palestinian stateless person who had a similar history as quite some homeless people, or a Romanian one also, man. And that means either alcohol problems or drug problems or both, mental health issues in general. I mean, and sometimes also therefore, sometimes not easy to live with, put it this way. Especially if you live there door to door, and if you also live with children. So we knew that's a big challenge, also from our experience. I mean, at the Open Door community, yeah, we as volunteers were sometimes quite close to the household members in terms of how we live together. The core community members were also a bit separate more, you know, in terms of living spaces. And because, I mean, oh, we had so many, I mean, very sweet and nice and kind, but also really troubled people. And so, I mean, two things came together, or three, I don't know. On the one hand, our political analysis that we said, it's not the general homelessness, it's the homeless migrant, the homeless refugee, who are the most marginalized, because homeless people in general, they have access to the social system. And at the time when we started, the migration from Eastern Europe didn't play such a big role yet. I mean, meanwhile, we experienced that also countries like Poland, but especially Romania and Bulgaria are part of the EU. There is still a lot of poverty migration, or put it this way, migration where that's not successful and where people end up in the streets. And they kind of, it's really like they fill up the homeless population. Like in a city like Hamburg, I don't know the percentage, but it's a sizable amount of homeless people are Eastern Europeans who just, I mean, in difference to most other Eastern Europeans, and that's sometimes people think, oh, all Bulgarians, they don't make it. It's of course not true. Most Bulgarians, Romanians and so on, they have oftentimes white-collar jobs, whatever, they just they disappear, so to say, in mainland society. But then there are always, and they were the poor in their own countries. It's also, by the way, the Roma population that's who is very marginalized in the West Balkan states and in also the EU states of the Balkan, like Bulgaria, Romania, but also ex-Yugoslavia, who then are also at the bottom line here, you know. So who are poverty-stricken, marginalized, kind of in a way disassociated with from society, and oftentimes also have to live a bit more by their own rules to survive. Okay, so there are, of course, connections between saying we focus on people who are, especially with these documents and not part of society. But at the same time, we also experienced so many people who basically just had the problem of papers and who were, you know, competent. I mean, you need a lot of energy to get that far to be in Hamburg if you maybe come from West Africa or from Syria or from Iran. Only few, very few come by plane and direct and with visa, be it whatever kind of visa. Most of them have a troubled and long journey behind, sometimes years, you know, Afghanistan people sometimes, or how many years they take to come to a place like this. And so, of course, that also sometimes really sucks, you know, energy, psychological, emotional energy. So sometimes also those people become ill or have psychological problems. But most often it's just people who want to live their lives, who are able to live together, who are very family oriented, who have experience to live in group, so to say. And so it's, to be honest, it's also easier to live with migrants who, as their first problem, have papers and some, of course, other issues too. You know, I mean, depression is, of course, an issue sometimes. You know, when you lack perspective, it really can suck. You know, your energy is out of you. And then we also stopped taking in general homeless people because we also realized that the help system, on the one hand, they used to be, it's a bit more different now, but they used to be very separate, you know, here, refugee, migrant, asylum, here, homeless and poverty, you know, different kind of players, but also that there are sometimes problems one side to the other saying, oh, they get everything, you know. I mean, racism plays in a role, I mean, as a general attitude, but then the envy, you know, kind of, I'm poverty stricken, I have a hard time, and all these refugees come and they get more than me, all those things. So there is also sometimes trouble in the community or between communities can be, and we just felt it's better to focus. So that was a long answer for a seemingly simple question.
Have you all ever had trouble with, like, the authorities, the government?
Surprisingly, no. I mean, for several reasons, I would say. For one, we started out networking and very much in the church field. And this is also church grounds. And so I would say, also, we are just an independent NGO, so to say, in the eyes of the authorities. We are still part of the church network. And in a city like Hamburg or other big cities, you have, in terms of undocumented people or issues about undocumented work, trafficking of people, drug trafficking and related with human, you know, all those things where irregularity is an issue. There are so many possibilities to do something or where authorities should take care of, that a place that might be known to authorities, but where we keep the ball, in this case, low, as we say in German. So we try not to force authorities to investigate here, kind of like, hey, we have illegal people and you can just know it. And here are their names and they want to fight together with us. Because, of course, I mean, for public employees or officers, they have to investigate once they get such information. So we try to keep it low. And I would say it's known what we do, but the church network helps. We tell people, oh, folks, please use a ticket. Don't attract police to the house by being member of you cannot control the lives of people. But I mean, we say, hey, that was a big issue in the 80s and 90s, the PKK, the Kurdish workers party, which the German government and other governments, they consider them terrorists. And so PKK meetings, I mean, hardcore meetings, especially also clandestine meetings, they were, of course, under the radar of Secret Service and so on. And so we said, oh, even if you have sympathy, and even if we don't want to kind of detest the fight of the struggle of the Kurds, you might get us in trouble, you know, with the authorities, things like that, for example, or drugs. We tell people, you're not allowed to use illegal drugs, and we are, I mean, if you live in the house, as long as you live in the house, of course, you're not allowed to deal with illegal drugs. In general, we say, we have a booklet or a leaflet, we say, do not do anything that attracts the police into the house. Of course, things like that happen, driving without ticket, or you cannot control the lives of everybody, but in the end, nothing of that caused a problem. We once had, that was the most tricky situation, we had one guy kind of out of psychological problems, and he killed himself in the end later, a few months later. He attacked another one, and it was dangerous what he was doing. He was a strong man, and so a community member called the police, which, I mean, we would have never thought of doing, call the police into our house. So basically, the police really came for this man, and they were looking for another man whom he had attacked, who had no papers at the time. Ooh. And so, and he was standing behind the door when the police was interviewing somebody who had also not the right papers, at least some papers, but not the right papers for being in Hamburg. And they just said to him, hey, you should not be in Hamburg. Please report back to your home in so-and-so state. And that was the closest to it. So we never had police raids here. I mean, we had people living here, and while they lived here or just around the time they lived here, they got arrested or something like that, but not never in the house. And there was only a short time, I mean, for 2 years in Hamburg, there was a very right-wing party, a bit like the present-day AfD party, who was part of the Senate, I mean, of the government of Hamburg, and even, you know, had the Senate for the Interior, it's kind of the Ministry of the Interior. And this guy, he was also a judge before. He was called the Judge Merciless. That was his nickname, Judge Merciless. He became the Senator for the Interior. So when he became Senator, but this is years ago, about 20 years ago, we were a little bit worried because he felt like this is a guy who is so erratic, he might not care about respect for the church. And he might somebody, you know, to prove that he's now as a senator is also a harsh guy, politically harsh, that they would raid the house and things like that. But after 2 years that he was gone also, and nothing like that ever happened. I mean, we are asked the same question every now and then. And for most of the time, we live with people without papers. At the moment, we have quite some folks who have legal status. That's also a bit of change in our system of kind of hospitality that we say, not always when a person gets access to the legal system. I mean, be it the asylum system, be it for health reasons, be it for family reasons. The three main kind of accesses or entries into the legal system, that they have to not always move out, but sometimes we agree together that it's a good idea to stay together for another while until things have more settled or stabilized or whatever. COVID, by the way, of course, did its own to that, because I mean, just because a young man who was very fragile now had the legal access to the asylum system, sending them to an asylum home where the COVID restrictions were so brutal, so restrictive, so oppressive, because, you know, they just didn't know how to handle it. And so they were very... so we said, of course, you don't have to go back there after having had a good life here, you know, because we know there is an enormous difference between living here and in a home. Yeah. So,
could you just say, like, what does that process of somebody coming here undocumented, like, and getting whatever kind of residency is available to them? Maybe it looks different for people from different places, but like, what does that process kind of look like for the average guest or some of the more common cases for folks?
I mean, we have had about 350 people living with us, and so there were, of course, a lot of different solutions. And most people, not all, but most people who lived with us, in the end, got access to some kind of legal system. And I mean, at the moment, with the way the EU is, as it is, a typical situation would be a person either has left his or her fingerprints in another EU country, like Bulgaria, like Italy, like Hungary, like you name it, or has gotten a visa from that country to enter the EU or the Schengen realm, Schengen area. And maybe even worse, they even have been granted protection. I would say, so to say, protection, like in Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, Italy also. I mean, there are different status of protection. So on the paper, it might sound quite good, but if the system doesn't provide for any kind of integration measures, be it language, be it help with housing, whatever, and that's even the case in Italy. I mean, all those societies that are very family-oriented, they assume that you get help by the family. And so you have, so they don't really discriminate against refugees in this case. They should discriminate, in fact, for refugees, because if you don't have family, you're left without, you know. And they say that's how Italians, that's how Hungarians live, or like Bulgarians. They don't have many social state help aids, you know. So why should they get it? Yeah, of course. On the one hand, you understand it. On the other hand, you say, hey, yeah, they should have it because they don't have family to fall back on, and so on. So that's one reason. Or you have left your fingerprints, and then the Dublin system, the so-called Dublin system, is in place, where the logic would be you should return to that country to go through your asylum procedure there and stay there, of course. But the people, for one reason or another, decided not to do so. I mean, be it economic reasons, because Germany is, in a way, the center, the economic center of the EU, not the sole center, but the biggest, definitely. So there is some gravitation here. And, of course, there are also a lot of family members maybe here. You know, I mean, Germany is the biggest country in the EU, and so there are also a lot of communities, national communities here, ethnic communities. And so people usually, and that's what migrants always did, or refugees in all of history, modern history, you migrate there, or you want to settle there where you have family or at least community. That's what the Germans did in North America and in South America. And that's how Syrians and Afghan and so on also do it. Actually, I mean, we would say that's good, because, of course, on the one hand, there is a sort of concentration, but on the other hand, it helps. Of course, in the beginning, you are more with the community, but they help you through many things. And in the end, of course, it takes, and that's what we know, and we should know from history, it takes generations. So anyhow, but the system says no, return. And it takes, there is a time limit on it, be it 6 to 18 months. And so after that time limit is survived, so to say, either with the help of a sanctuary, a church asylum, which can be also declared for our house because we are church grounds, or the person might just stay totally irregularly here, then it's up to 18 months that they have to, then they can surface again, say, hello, I want to claim asylum here, and then the German authorities have to take care of it. What the outcome is the other question. You never know. Another situation that we had, well, maybe 5%, I don't know. Sometimes women, I mean, mostly women, sometimes we also had men, but mostly it was the situation that women were pregnant with a child from a person, from a man, who either had a German passport or a steady stay in Germany. But as long as the child is in the womb, you cannot prove that. And so, and maybe you entered Germany or whatever, you're here without legal stay. And so you could be deported. And so people need time to give birth or to clarify with a father or with a potential father. You are you the father? Or will you be willing to testify? And so on. So having a child sometimes was a solution. Health issues, that people got accepted on the grounds of, you know, that. I mean, our basic attitude is the system is as it is. It is not fair. It is not as we wish it to be. But we try to contribute in small and little ways that migration to the fact that migration is normal and to the self-determination of people in migration or in seeking security. So that means we cannot change the big system, but we can contribute to some people's lives that they, in this case, just get more time. Because oftentimes people are deported, not only out of those reasons that I said, but, you know, there is something going wrong in the asylum case. They didn't get enough help. They didn't understand. They distrusted the person who was doing the interview. A typical thing is somebody from the community says, say this, say that. They say this, say that. The authorities understand it's just a say-say. And they say no. And so there you are. Then you are left alone with your negative asylum case. And so people need time sometimes. Sometimes also time to understand that really it's true. I do not have a legal chance in this system. And so a few people also either traveled on somewhere else, who knows, or traveled back to their whatever home country, or at least where they could return to. Sometimes also with help, you know, that we helped a few people to, for example, to build a little house, to have a start. I mean, you know, we collected money, we asked people, especially for three different Roma families, you know, from ex-Yugoslavian states, because they, with children, you know, the perspective was so dull and brutal, actually, for if you have children. And so it's, or one part of the family was deported, so the others didn't want to stay. That can also be the outcome. But most often with gaining time you also get your rights. And, you know, with the right lawyers or counseling place and so on. And we try to help people, of course, getting into the system of if they haven't been in there. I mean, oftentimes they come to our house because somebody from the help system asks us to do, you know, like from the church or from a counseling place. They say, we have so-and-so client, you know, they have a very good church counseling place here in Hamburg. So they would say, we have so-and-so, we try to find this and that out, but we need more time. Could that person stay with you? That's actually the ideal case for us, if a competent a counseling place asks us. So we already know, oh, somebody takes care of the legal issues. In other cases, like if a family member or a former household member asks us to help somebody, oh, we always have to look very closely who helps them. I mean, we are no lawyers, we are no social rights experts. We are just a house. We are people who offer hospitality. We have our jobs. We want to do some activism. We want to have some private time. We don't want to be here 24/7 on duty. And so it's, of course, very important for us that people have their help networks. And if the network comes to us and say, can you host somebody, then that's actually the best case. And if the person then comes to know us and say, hey, hello, I'm so-and-so, we say, hello, this is how it works here, this is our house. That's actually the ideal access to the house then. And we make some agreements and, you know, like, oh, this is your situation. Oh, then it's at least 6 months. If it's 8 months, what the heck? You still have to, of course, adhere to the rules of the house. If, for example, we agree upon somebody living with us and it doesn't work out, we would also, I mean, we talk, of course, with each other. But we would, in the end, if it just doesn't work out, we would also ask somebody to leave.
All right, that's all great. Is there anything else people should know?
I like it living here. You know, it's of course challenging. I've been doing this now for 27 years, and I would say quite some of my gray hair that I have already. I mean, it's not part of my family history to have gray hair so soon. So I've had gray hairs for many years, and so there's also it's demanding. It's also demanding to live in community, to be honest. But and whatever the word is, but and it's also very nourishing to me. It's, I mean, my household members are great examples to me of resilience, of bravery, of keeping up hope, of inspiration, so to say. And it's also, I will not travel so many places of the world anymore, I guess. I mean, for good reasons of climate, and I'm getting older, kind of. But the world is coming to my place. So I can partake in so many cultural, culinarian kind, I don't know, you know, in terms of kitchen, religious, ethnic, peculiarities of the world, just because I'm here. Just because we say, oh, you can stay with us. And so I'm a Southern German with my own, you know, questions about Northern Germans, and you are from Afghanistan. Oh, you are Hazara, and so on. So we learn a lot about the world. We oftentimes have fun with each other. So I would say this is my life. I love this life. And I think that's what also keeps me here, you know. And I talked a lot about the technicalities, or about, you know, how you get there, problems and so on. But I mean, what we try to live here is a little bit of what, no, not a little bit. We try to live in a way as we wish society should be. And we are far from perfect. And that's okay. So, you know, we are not a vegan, but we are vegan, vegetarian oriented. We are not so radical in our, you know, in our political activism, but we are politically active. We write a little newspaper, not a big one, but we do something about it, you know, we and so on. And we don't try to cramp the house full with as many people as possible, do it all, save the world, but we do a little bit of it, you know. So, and in the end, I would say if the whole of society shared more with each other, resources, time, love, the world would be better off. I mean, as Peter Morin would say, you know, I mean, we try to contribute to the world to be a better place. And of course, that gives me a good feeling also. Although I know that we are far from perfect, there'll be this sin, we fall, etc. But we try to contribute to a world that's better, that's livable for all. And so it just feels like I'm in the right place. Period.
That wraps up another episode of Coffee with Catholic Workers. If you'd like to reach out to us with comments, suggestions, clarification of thought, you can email us at coffeewithcatholicworkers@gmail.com. We'd like to thank our Catholic Worker audio engineer Chris, as well as David Hayes for our music, and Becky McIntyre for our graphic. Thanks for joining us again for some clarification of thought. We hope today's conversation has been enlightening, and maybe even that you're encouraged to go out and help build a world where it's easier to be good.